Hello and welcome to this episode of The Geek Embassy Watches Star Trek Discovery. I'm your host, Regina McMenemy, and I'm here tonight with Dante and our very special guest, Liam Dines. Say hi, everybody.
What up?
Hello.
Liam and I are writer friends, both with a previous indie publishing experience, I'll say. Sounds good, right?
Very polite way of saying
yes.
It.
Yes, very polite way of saying it. And we've been talking off camera and off recording about Star Trek Discovery pretty much since it started. And I wanted to have maybe somebody who wasn't quite just as enthusiastic as Dante and I, although Liam is pretty much a fan too. So we might just all be fanning out over this. We'll see how this episode goes.
But I'm pretty excited. It's gonna be
a new voice for our the Geek Embassy Watches disco. I won't dance. So tonight we have episodes 12 and 13. Episode 12 is titled Vaulting Ambition, and episode 13 is What's Past is Prologue. Pretty intense episodes. They move pretty quick. We had a lot of sort of story, and I feel like the characters are pretty established at this point, but little character development maybe.
Yeah, a tiny bit. It seems like we have gotten through most of the character focused bits at this point. For the most part, the show seems to be hurtling towards a conclusion because they've only got 50 more minutes per episode, 100 minutes of screen time to go ahead and wrap up everything that they've been doing for the last 12, 13 episodes.
Well, there's actually two more episodes.
Yeah. They got 100 more minutes to split over two episodes.
Yeah.
I mean, unless episode 15 is some mega long, hour and a half bit, which, I mean, considering how many curveballs this show has thrown at us, I would not be surprised if they gave us an hour and a half long.
And a double episode at the end. That could be. Yeah. Well, let's resolve our predictions from episodes 10 and 11, which seem kind of hilarious. Isabella is not joining us tonight, but I will share what her predictions were. So Saru, she thought something bad had happened to his people, which I guess we can give her kind of half credit for that one.
Because
spoilers do abound, people who are listening and watching. We're going to spoil both episodes. And, I mean, people get eaten in the Mirror Universe. His people get eaten.
God, yeah. Yeah, so something terrible does happen to his people.
I would say on its face, that's a full mark.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a half mark. Maybe it isn't that it's some extinction crisis, but I'd say being a slave race and then eaten.
And eaten, yeah.
Qualified.
I think I go there, too. She also said the spore drive was going to be the thing that got them back into the Mirror Universe, or got them out of the Mirror Universe.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, it's half the spore drive and half Trekno-babble that got them back. So.
Well, we'll give her some credit for both of those. All right, so Dante...
Yeah.
This is funny because we don't talk too much, at least in the second episode of an episode 13, we don't talk too much about Ash, but most of your predictions were about Ash, that his consciousnesses were going to fight with each other, that there was going to be a psychic struggle, and that Ash was going to win out and somehow help the crew through self-sacrifice.
Okay, I feel like the jury is still out on that one.
The jury is definitely still out on that one. I think there was kind of a fight for his consciousness, though.
Yes. I mean,
that happened.
Yeah, I mean, there was also a surgery for his consciousness, but we'll get to that later.
Yes. And you thought that Lorca wasn't really going to be a traitor, and that was a red herring because they had pushed it so hard that you didn't think that was going to be true.
Yeah, that one was completely wrong. Damn it, internets.
Yep. The internets are right again. 2 for 2 on this one.
Oh, God. That's so frustrating.
It still blows me away that the Ash theory was right. Like, that still gets me.
But. Yeah, like, the Ash theory was right, and now the Lorca theory was correct. Now I just know that I need to stay away from the Star Trek Discovery subreddit, and I'll be fine.
Yes. Well, it was Liam who was telling me about Mira Lorca being the one, or our Prime Lorca being really Mira Lorca. So.
Yeah.
So I have to nod. I have to give you a nod for that one too, Liam.
Again, I just mostly stole that. I don't even remember where I got it from. I wasn't checking Reddit or anything too often. I was just sort of reading reviews, like comments on reviews, where people were just spitballing, and it was mostly the really angry people who were just saying that he was Mira Lorca, mostly just because they couldn't comprehend that he might just be
a
slightly
jerk.
Checkered and gray, but.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
So it turned out that they were sort of, they backed into the right answer for
right.
the wrong reasons.
For the wrong reasons, not
That's
like actually going
hilarious.
At it. Yeah, it is, because I liked that he was so checkered. And I actually, a good friend of mine stopped watching the show. Like, she loves Jason Isaac. Like, she just thinks he's, you know, the cat's meow. And she stopped watching the show because he was a bad guy. And he wasn't what she wanted him to be. And she was like, I'm tired of seeing him play bad guys. I want him to be he was in Star Trek. And so he was going to be a hero. And she got Lorca, and Lorca's
which is
muddy.
Weird, because I actually had the opposite reaction, which is that as soon as they cast Jason Isaacs, I was like, well, then this guy's going to be, there's going to be something up with this guy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't cast Jason Isaacs to get a good guy.
Well, no, I mean, I can't even imagine him like his face not looking evil.
Yeah, he's just got one of those faces.
He does. Like his comportment, the way he carries himself. Yeah. He's just a bad guy.
Yeah, but Luke is just a bad, bad man.
And that was what I said. I said he was definitely a bad guy, and he was definitely up to no good. Mm-hmm. And I also thought that Dr. Culber was going to live. And I was wrong on that one.
Yeah.
I actually had hoped that he would have been in the mirror doctor would have been alive. And I imagined that what happened to Giorgio was going to happen to him. They would bring the mirror version back, but
okay.
Didn't happen.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to let you finish, but I just found
that
really...
was it. That was all of the predictions. So
oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Cause I was just going to make a very punny remark about how you use the fact that he was up to no good. Would you say that you solemnly swore it? Get it? Because he was in Harry Potter.
Yes.
Sorry. I had to. I really just had to.
I did actually write those very words in my notes too. That I said.
Oh, very nice. Good.
So yes. So that was my very thing. All right. So do we want to try to do a really quick summary? Let's see. What does the IMDb says? Burnham heads to the ISS Charon with a special gift from the Emperor. With the help of an unexpected source, Stamets gets clarity while trapped inside the mycelial network, and Saru asks for Laurel's help.
Yep.
That actually does hit all the major points of it.
Yeah, pretty much. So, So they head to the Charon and. Yeah.
The gift is Lorca.
The gift is Lorca. He spends all episode basically in a torture chamber, being tortured by the brother of a person that he had apparently been copulating with, and subsequently either killed or got her killed, which doesn't particularly matter to her her surviving brother. And that's when we find out that, spoiler alert, Lorca is actually Mirror Lorca. And he's been Mirror Lorca the whole time.
Yeah.
Just like Bruce Willis. It was great. And then we finally see Stamets work his way out of the mycelial network with the help of Dr. Culber and Mirror Stamets, who is a spineless, sniveling coward, and I hate every single second that he's on screen, but I love every single second that he's on screen, too, because he's still Stamets, and I love it.
Well, I just, one of my favorite pieces of that was when, oh, wait, that's in that, that's in the next episode? Yeah, that's in the next episode. I'll wait.
Yeah.
But yeah, he, and he's not, he's being kind of cagey. Mirror Stamets is being kind of cagey. With Prime Stamets, with like, you need to help me and I need to follow you out and you need to make this happen because I've been stuck here and being stuck here, because isn't that what he says, like being stuck here,
yeah, is, being stuck here is degrading the mycelial network, right. Well, so, at least that was his working theory at the time,
right.
We soon come to find out during the episode, or maybe it was the beginning part of episode 13 that Oh, no, it actually was during episode 12, because Culber was the one who ends up telling regular Stamets, or Prime Stamets, that Mirror Stamets is tampering with the network and using it for his own gain, and his own personal ambition ended up corrupting it. And it is breaking down from the inside. Everyone has got these weird half burn, half scabby things that was, you know, it's spreading like a, like a pox or like a poison rash, or something like that. Up and down their arms and things like that, and it's up to Prime Stamets to get out and repair it before the entire universe implodes upon itself or something.
Right.
You know, Trek no babble. It's a thing. So, can we just start there with Culber being alive, air quotes?
Yeah. Oh god, that scene. I cried. I don't know if anybody else did, but...
I mean, you know what, Liam, you haven't been here. What were your thoughts on that scene? Because if I start going, I'm not going to stop.
I didn't mind it. I took it as being sort of, it was both Stamets' own mind and it was the network itself expositing what needed to be exposited for him to learn it. And I've sort of been fine. I've accepted this fungus network as a thing, as a device for this story. I think, like you guys, like I said, even a little bit pre-show, or that you weren't sure if I would be a slightly critical voice or a supportive voice. And I've been just boosting this thing the whole time. And even the pilot was, it didn't start the strongest. The pilot had some issues, but since then I've just, my enjoyment of this show ramps up continually, and I've just been willing to accept the stuff
that's how that we've other been people too.
Can't get past. Talking to a friend a couple weeks ago who just, he couldn't really get past the Klingon stuff.
Okay.
And like, this is a smart, very sci-fi literate friend of mine who was usually very open to all this stuff. And he couldn't get past just the, almost the just not even story-based, just the weird arbitrary nature of the Klingon stuff and the seemingly completely unnecessary reason to do it, which then we explain, like my wife and I are sort of up on the background of it, and we're like, well, that was a Brian Fuller decision. Arguably it's one of the things that, according to the gossip, got him more or less voluntold to leave the show, because they spent so much money and time redoing the Klingons.
Oh, really?
That's what I've seen somewhere anyway. I can't source it immediately.
That's okay.
I'd try, but it's 11:30 at night for me. And
yeah.
God, that's sorry.
It's a thing I've seen somewhere, and it was that Brian Fuller spent so much time on that that he that the network just sort of said that they parted ways. There were creative differences.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, of course,
people who've been left to pick up the pieces, first of all, have done a spectacular job, because I think I think the fact that it's turned out, again, I'm probably an apologist for it, but I think the fact that it's turned out anywhere near as good as it has been sort of nothing short of a miracle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah. And I heard that too, and everybody thought it was gonna like tank because there had been so many creative issues that came out in the beginning.
Yeah, like Brian Fuller walks away, they delay it twice. Mm-hmm. They never show anything. They keep sort of equivocating on what it's going to be. Which then ended up being like necessary because the first two episodes were basically thrown out at the end of the two episodes, with the exception of Burnham's actions and the war.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there was a weird soft reboot in the middle of it. But then also after that, if you look at the behind the scenes, that was where they lose their showrunner. Mm-hmm. They have to switch over the whole thing. They've been left with these odd choices. And then another thing that I will, the one very quick anecdote I will tell that happened really interestingly to my wife and I a couple months ago, because again, we're in Toronto where they're shooting. We had gone out for our anniversary a little bit late because we had a 2-month-old at that point. We missed the actual date of our anniversary by a little bit. And we went to see Blade Runner and then went out to dinner at one of the places we really like near our house, which is in the east end of the city, which is near the studios. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that as we sat there for 2 hours or so, just slowly eating a very, very good meal, that the table next to us was people who work on the set.
Oh, wow.
And they were in the midst of shooting one of these last two episodes, I think probably even past where we're watching right now. I think it was very early October, and by what I'd read around there, they were close to shooting the finale. They were close to wrapping the whole season. Mm-hmm. And they were all just sort of, again, it was people just talking shop over dinner. Right. It wasn't, and they weren't being, we were doing the best we could to talk about how blown our minds were after Blade Runner, which we both loved. But then also after sitting there for a while and this table of three or four people slowly filtering in as their day ended from about 7 o'clock until 9:30 or so, because they were just continually waiting for people. They were like, yeah, we're with the fourth unit, and they were trying to translate it from the original Klingon, and there just turned out there was a lot of derisive talking about how absurd the Klingons were and how hard it was to work for the actors in all of that gear.
Yeah.
And that it was an open secret how much everyone working on it sort of had some distaste for it, and that were they to make those decisions again, mm-hmm. someone would probably not make those decisions.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was like that as a viewer, like looking at them and trying to like suss out emotion with the way they had done the masks. Mm-hmm. I just remember thinking we couldn't see anything of the actors. And then when they had the Ash reveal, a couple episodes back, I was like, oh, I should have been able to recognize him from his voice. But it was only when he was like warring with himself, where it's, the mirror actual Klingon of himself on the rebel base, and Ash, who's been, implanted with his consciousness, like looking at each other, that I like hear their voices next to each other. And I'm like, oh, okay, these are the same people.
Yeah. It's
it was the only way you would have recognized him. Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's why I didn't think that was pretty well done. Like some people were up in arms that was a cheap thing. I'm like, no, this is,
I don't think so.
They said it in as many words that was their plan. Mm-hmm. He showed up the next episode as a human.
Yeah.
Maybe the next episode, maybe two episodes later, which made a bit of sense. So something it could be a bit of time for the surgery to happen.
Yeah.
And then he was very PTSD and very sort of affected by something. So you knew there was something up. That's the one thing I really liked about this show, in hindsight even. As you watch it, you see it like they haven't been cheating.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they haven't been doing the cheap tricks or whatnot.
Yeah, it hasn't been, well, I mean, there have been curveballs, but it doesn't feel like anything has really come out of left field. Like, I absolutely feel like everything that has happened within the parameters and the rules and the universe that they have set up for us. Nothing feels out of place with what they've done.
Well, and to tie back to what launched us into this discussion, so the scene in the Mycelial Network with Stamets and the Doctor.
Culber.
And what you were saying, Liam, about how it's a combination of his own mind and the mycelial network. you know, there's been a lot of blowback, and I don't know how much you guys have seen, but of people.
I haven't kept up with any of the gossip on this show at all.
Well, I've just seen a few articles floating around where people are upset. And that was one thing that Isabella had said too, where, you know, one of the gay couple gets broken up and one of the gay, you know, couple dies. Yeah. And she was pretty upset about that. And a lot of people have been upset, by like the idea that he was, you know, it was a meaningless death for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I really felt like this scene, given Stamets's, character, he wouldn't have come around with anybody else or in any other way. He had to have some sort of, he was, you know, Culver was the only one he had that emotional connection to.
Yeah.
And so he had to have him there in the network with him, or else he would have just, you know, logic his way around it, because he needed to use his emotion to get out of it. So he would have just like been trying to like figure out how he could try to fix it in the, while he was in the network. And I think he wouldn't have been able to pull himself out of it without that.
See, I mean, like, I see where you're coming from, but I disagree. I mean, I still feel like it was a pointless death. Seeing Culber there softened the blow a little bit, but it doesn't take away from the fact that that we got 10 episodes with these characters, and we all loved them. They were, from what I could tell, they were fan favorites. And everyone was really cool with how they were doing, how they were portrayed, you know, not to mention just being a non-hetero couple, but also being an interracial couple as well.
Yes.
It was wonderful, just for me as a person of color, seeing like, oh, look at them, like, we get to have healthy relationships on television too, awesome. And then you snap the neck. I disagree fundamentally with the fact that or with the assertion that Culber needed to die in order to make this happen. I feel like, like, with the amount of technobabble that they've got in this show, and the, you know, logic loops and backflips that they've got to do in order to just get themselves into the Prime universe again, and to get themselves in and out of all these other fun situations, they could have come up with something, but they chose to murder a person of color, you know, and a non-hetero person all in one fell swoop. I'm still not happy with it at all. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like there is anything inside that scene that necessitated him dying. As far as I'm concerned, like, it's just another white male who is getting his story pushed forward by the death of a lover and or a minority person. It's just it doesn't sit well with me. It's not gonna sit well with me. Thinking back on it, like, it still annoys me. Like, it's not as close to my heart as it is to Izzy, but it's still like,
it
really rubs me the wrong way. I've been unhappy with some of the things that they've done on this show. But that was just because, like, I thought, like, oh, the writing in this episode was dumb. The plot that they chose for this episode is dumb, or like, oh, this is clearly just filler and they're looking for a throwaway gag. But nothing like this has nothing like that has actually, like, made me angry. Like thinking back on the death and everything that's happened with regards to the death, it just makes me angry.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think there's anything wrong with being angry about it either.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that also shows that the writing, the character development were, you know,
absolutely
effective. Go ahead.
One thing that I've said to someone recently, I think just on Twitter, an acquaintance of mine was having another, two people were having a discussion about, it doesn't matter, tangential acquaintances, but then one of them was just like, I just don't know, I still just think this is weird, it doesn't feel right. I'm like, but also, when's the last time Star Trek, like, got your blood up?
Yeah. Yes.
When's the last time it did anything
Yes.
that made you actually
worry,
either surprised or angry or worried or something. I would argue maybe a couple of the Abrams movies, because I also am an apologist for those. I think two of the three of those are honestly like top three or four Star Trek movies, but that's probably a whole other discussion.
Our scope.
I entirely agree with that assessment, actually. Like, I mean, I really like the original. I really like Beyond. I need to watch Beyond again now that I think about it. That might actually be what I do after we record this podcast, now that I think about it. Like Into Darkness was just, I mean, like, it's okay. It's just okay.
Well, what did you think about that as a story move, though, Liam, in terms of like using Culver and his connection in that moment?
I think you're right about that. It needed to be, because it's sort of, it needed to be something to get Stamets going, because, I mean, he started the show as this humorless, unpleasant, snippy jerk.
Yeah.
That you slowly saw unravel into new people, into a more well-rounded person, and now he's one of my favorite characters, although actually I kind of like all of the characters.
Yeah, I do too.
I did start off being like, I'm not sure who on this I actually like.
Who do I relate to?
That was another argument that I didn't really agree with, that people said, I don't like anyone. None of them feel like Starfleet people. I'm like, well, they don't have to.
Right.
Like the old... My main thing of this is just that we, like, if you rewatch any Star Trek, with the exception of a few chunks, it's any of the first 20, 30 years of Star Trek is pretty boring sometimes.
Have you watched Encounter at Farpoint recently? Like, that episode is terrible.
There's just so much Drek and dull Star Trek. And then to get these arguments but especially towards the beginning when people are making, then none of them feel like Starfleet. They don't feel like they like each other. It doesn't feel like they're the right kind of crew. I'm like, okay, but again, have you gone back and watched much of that recently?
And how I much just is don't it think colored it works by your today. Nostalgia. Yeah.
It's almost all nostalgia.
Yeah.
Most of it wouldn't work today.
And
also you can watch like the Orville right now, which you can't even use as a great example because it's it's also half a Seth MacFarlane show. Well, it's an entirely Seth MacFarlane show, but it's 50% boring Star Trek The Next Generation and 50% Seth MacFarlane jokes.
Right.
And I actually don't even dislike it particularly. I think it's been about half and half.
Yeah.
Either good to kind of really good to just awful.
Yeah.
So,
one of my exes is watching it and she absolutely loves it, but she's a really big Star Trek nerd.
I think it's interesting because I know I've heard this a lot in terms of the critiques of Disco have been that it's not Trek enough, that it's, you know, it's so different, etc. And I keep thinking about like if they would have just recanned Trek, right, and just put out another Next Generation, maybe amped it up a little bit for, you know, current aesthetics, that would have been, everybody would have been mad about that too. Like if it had been like Star Trek, you know, it would have gotten the same thing. And I think this is just so much more innovative in its storytelling, especially as some of these plot lines are like wrapping in on themselves.
I find it super relatable. First of all, like with the crew, like I've heard those critiques as well, that, you know, they're not a family, you know, and this isn't Trek. I think that's absolute baloney, because I'm trying not to swear on this feed. How many of us have gone into work let's remind ourselves, like, this is a job for them.
Job, yeah.
Like, how many of us have gone into work and been super friends with literally everyone that we work with? The answer is probably never.
Right.
Like I'm sure that there are some exceptions and some people out there in Radioland are already yelling at me and saying like, ah, I love everyone I work with. I'm sure that that's not the experience for the vast majority of us.
Yeah.
We go in and like, there's that one person that we're not really friends with, but we're not really not friends with. We just kind of like, hey, how's it going? And then we just kind of move along our days.
I think it also makes sense too, that like they're at war.
They're also at war.
This is not like one of the things about Next Generation. I said this in the last episode that we recorded, where I was talking mm-hmm. about how I never really felt like, even with Tasha Yar's death in the first season, I never really felt like anybody was at risk in Next Generation. Or didn't feel like anybody was in danger. Like, I'm worried that all of these characters are about to die. And I think that that's good for the franchise. Like, I think it's good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Keep everybody on edge
It's like an energy from it. Because, like, mm-hmm. I think the examples I was thinking of when I made that point was, because my thing was just, like, when's the time it got your blood up? When you watch like Best of Both Worlds for the first time, although for most of us that was obviously almost 30 years ago, not that long.
That was probably the first time in Next Generation that that you actually thought like, oh crap,
Picard
is actually going to be a villain for the rest of the season.
Right. Yeah.
That's the thing is like, I don't hate to do it because it's me. I love talking about myself because I'm self-absorbed. I literally just read an article about this on thegeekembassy.com. It's called Why Your Fandom Doesn't Belong to You. I just happened to write it. Incidentally, I wrote it about a completely different franchise, but in that article, like I was talking about the phenomenon about how fans and audiences have absolutely zero idea what you want. And what you said a couple minutes ago is absolutely correct. That if they had just rehashed Trek, you would get people who were upset saying like, oh man, there's no original ideas anymore. Just doing the same thing again. And now that we're doing something different, the same people are saying like, oh, well, we wanted it to be different, but the same at the same time. Don't know what we want, but I'm on board with this. It's gotten my blood up. It's gotten reactions out of me. It has incented me to continue paying CBS $10 a month to go ahead and watch this damn show, which I'm still mad about, and I will always be mad about.
I'm kind of glad though that it's on the streaming, and when we get to episode 13, we can talk more about the action sequences, but they have a really, I know they blew a lot of money on the Klingons, but the production value of this Star Trek is crazy. Like the costumes and the special effects and the things that they're doing, they're just so well. And some of that, it's definitely more violent. You're seeing, there's more blood. I mean, the torture scenes with Ash were god awful.
Yeah.
And those were things that I don't think they would have been able to do in as much detail if it was on broadcast TV. And they swore. I mean, I know the swearing was kind of like a look what we can do.
But and they showed Klingon boobs because they could.
I thought Tilly, the first F word in Star Trek was the best thing.
Yeah, it was. Awesome.
What made it even better was when I read something like the day after, when people were naturally writing their little articles about it, was that she had improv that.
Oh really?
And then, well, that's awesome.
Anthony Rapp improv right back, that was, I think. Maybe I'm misquoting that it was the first take where that happened, but I read that she just improvised dropping the F bomb, and then he was hilarious. No, you're right. And I don't know if that was also improv because there was awful lot of coverage.
Yeah,
but I mean that's amazing.
That's awesome, though.
If that is true,
so many of my favorite lines are improv. I wonder if she improvised too the line when she comes out as Killy Tilly. I can't remember what her nickname
Captain
was.
Captain Killy.
And she said something to Lorca. I can't remember exactly what the line was. Something about, well, I'd have you killed or something. I can't remember when she was, you know,
something graphic and it was, terrible.
Yeah, and something, and she's like, "Was it too much?" And he's like, "Not for this universe." Mm-hmm. But the look on his face was so genuinely surprised. I wonder if she improv that one too.
It was, I mean, it's incredible. And you know what? And now that we bring up, you know, the look on Lorca's face, like, can we also just acknowledge the fact that, like, a lot of the money that's been spent on the show has been spent on some incredible actors?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, you're
well cast.
You're like Doug Jones. He's not a name that most people recognize, but he's been around the industry for a long time. Most people know him as Abe Sapien from the Hellboy movies, and and I unfortunately know him as the Silver Surfer from those god awful Fantastic Four movies, and also the basically the Hollow Man from Pan's Labyrinth. Like, the dude's been around for a long, long time. Like, and I'm sure that he demanded a good salary. Like Michelle Yeoh, like we all know who Michelle Yeoh is. Right. Jason Isaacs has been around for a good amount of time. Anthony Rapp has been killing it on and off Broadway for years and years and years. With the amount of money that they're throwing at these pretty high level stars, and the fact that they are able to also go ahead and get as tight of a script as they do and keep up with the special effects and keep up with just the fight choreography, it blows my mind. It absolutely blows my mind. Because this is a show that has no reason to be this good. This is a show that I honestly, if you asked me 6 months ago, I wanted it to fail. I wanted it to fail so badly.
Yeah, we came in the first episodes that we were talking about, and you're like, "Oh, this is going to be terrible," and it's the crack of my my adult life, and it's going to be terrible.
Yeah, and it's not I have better memories of this than I do of the first couple of episodes of me watching Voyager, and that was the show that I literally grew up with.
Awful.
Listen, I was eight when Next Generation ended, right?
Right.
It debuted in 87, and I was two.
So old.
It debuted in 1987. I was 2 years old, and my father sat me on his lap every single night when we watched it. So I've seen the whole series, but I was like two through eight.
Right.
The first Star Trek that I remember watching is Voyager, and I remember being really excited when The Rock came on there because I was still watching wrestling back then. But this is not going to turn into Dante's Childhood Cast. Anyways, there's got to be other things about this episode that we could talk about. Please Eat McGanglia.
Really short, which is the question?
Oh no! It was really short.
Time wise,
it was only like what 37, 38 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, something like that, and that's including like the previously on and the credits,
right?
And the end credits, and it was weird. I remember that being it was another little footnote when people were writing about it, because I generally tried to watch, I'd read the stuff before and some of it after. And the worst part of it is that I can't watch it until Monday. It drives me crazy. Especially the long day on Monday.
Right. You're like, I know, I'm going to watch it.
Because you guys get it at 8:30 on the streaming service.
Well, we get it because we're on the West Coast, so we get it at 6 o'clock.
Oh yeah, on the Sunday night.
On Sunday night.
Whereas for us, it does air on TV. It airs on our Canadian low rent version of Sci-Fi Network.
Yeah.
For you guys, it's Space Channel, so it airs on TV, and then the streaming service has got some agreement where they can't do it until 24 hours later.
Oh.
So I get to try to not read all of the stuff that people write about it on Monday.
I usually fail.
I end up reading an amount of it. I try not to spoil all of it for myself.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah, I don't
That's a tough 8 hours after basically after I get our kindergartner dropped off at about 9 a.m. I'm just like, all right, now I have to get through the next about 7 hours until I pick him up without reading stuff. And then after I go get him, which eats up 45 minutes or something, the trip there, wandering around, getting him back. Mm-hmm. Then I gotta kill another about 3.5 to 4 hours between 4 and about 7 o'clock when he starts getting ready to go to bed. And then I try to time the bedtime process, because I do that too, to end right around 8. Just so that the second we're done,
you can go do it.
And turn it on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always my husband says, "Oh, it's Sunday." I'm like, "Yes, it is." And it's that, oh, because we have to watch after my daughter goes to bed. So we can't watch, exactly when it comes out at 6 because she would want to know what was going on. And she's still scared by Moana, so.
That's adorable. I'm sorry.
And
It's adorable
Frozen.
that she's scared of Moana.
Yeah, of Moana. And well, less now with Moana because she's watched it enough, but she's still scared of Frozen. She told me last night, she's like, "There's that ice monster and I don't like it. I just like the songs from Frozen, mommy." And I'm like, "That's okay. You don't have to watch Frozen." She hasn't watched Frozen in like a year, so it's not like she's.
Oh man, you must just be like, hallelujah.
Oh yeah, I miss the whole Frozen thing. That's delightful. Yes, but let's not get it. All right. So, I think the one thing that we didn't really talk about in 12 is the surgery to remove Volk from Ash.
Yeah.
Maybe. Do we really know if he's alive?
That's the thing, is that the episode ended on that cliffhanger
Right.
where Laurel says, "I've done the surgery, he's himself again." After he went through some horrific either mental and or physical pain. And the episode just cuts off, goes to credits, and then episode 13 happens, and there is
Not even a mention
not
of
a
him.
clue
Yeah.
of what is happening with him,
Yeah.
because frankly, there are more important things happening, and
Right.
I don't care about what Ash
Yep.
Tyler is doing right now.
Yep.
Which it's just weird, and I am still sticking quite closely to my original prediction that Ash is going to have some sort of mental battle with himself,
It could be.
because like, she comes from the house of Klingon
Deception.
deceit and
Yeah.
deception. Yeah, like I do not believe for a second that what she says is entirely truthful. Like, I am convinced that it is two truths that sandwich a lie. That's the most convincing way to deliver a lie, is to
Yeah.
sandwich it between two truths.
Oh, sure, absolutely. And keep it hidden. What do you think, Liam? Do you think Ash is alive?
Don't know. I agree. There's no way to have figured that one out yet.
Yeah.
And especially because they did do the just like, well, no, we're not doing that right now.
Right.
He's unconscious, and this next episode takes place over the span of about, maybe not real time, but close to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be curious. I had that thought of like maybe she just made Volk more stable, or maybe she took Ash out. I don't know, but I don't know if Volk could actually speak English, so I don't know that he could handle just being like full on just him in Ash's body.
I think the idea that there's going to be some sort of mental battle is probably correct. I don't think whatever she's doing is going to, like, obviously she is, yes. Don't take her at face value. She's done something that they don't know yet.
Well, and
So
how did
he's
she
gonna
have
have,
these
and
oh,
then he's
wait.
also gonna play a part in the actual resolution of the war,
Yeah,
aside
he
from
has
the just
to.
spore calculations.
Yeah, he can't have been this far, carried this far into the show and had such prominence to not have some sort of role in this next battle. I don't even know like battles.
I mean,
Yeah.
there's gonna be
Okay,
some
let's.
weird stuff,
Yeah,
and
like.
then the Federation has to win, so it's gonna be,
Yeah.
they gotta get all their systems back.
I know. I said that when we were watching episode 13, which we should probably just jump into because we've already been almost an hour and we haven't quite we haven't touched on 13 yet. But I said that during 13, I said to Chris, I was like, "Well, if they have to win, like we already know,
Yeah, we have to win, but like,
how true.
how are they gonna win at this
So,
point? I mean, and yeah, I mean,
it
and here's the thing, that because I was looking to see exactly when this fell in the original universe timeline. It has apparently started 10 years before The Adventures of Kirk and Spock.
I know. It's not very long at all.
So it's not very long, and they've just ostensibly fast-forwarded. Spoiler alert, they come back out of the Mirror Universe, and they are 9 months ahead of where they were.
Right. So they're almost a year closer to that now.
Yeah, and the Klingons have, the Klingons have basically taken over the entire front, presumably because Discovery is not there to help ward them off. But yeah, like they ostensibly jumped a year closer to that timeline.
To Kirk and Spock, yeah.
Yeah. Now, assuming that none of the assuming that there's no more time traveling and universe jumping shenanigans that happen, like they can actually stretch this out for a while. There's nothing saying that the entire second season can't be like a year or two in the war effort.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
They don't have to immediately jump to, oh, cool, Discovery is back. We have to kill the Klingons now. And I don't think that they should. I think that the show should end this season with Discovery, basically getting its tail kicked. So that way they set up a series-long conflict at this point where they've got another two or three seasons worth of there's a war with the Klingons right now, which is something that, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think that we've ever really seen. There was animosity in Shatner, and there was that uneasy truce in Next Generation, and there was some kerfuffle that happened in Deep Space Nine, but it was never all-out war.
No, I no, we haven't seen war, and it's clear in the original series that they still harbor the
bad feelings
from the war. Both sides do. Mm-hmm. The Klingons a little less. The Klingons of the original series. Yeah. Have a little bit more bravado and a little bit more showmanship.
Yeah, I mean,
way more than these guys did, but
yeah, I mean, and
but then you have like Worf after, who at least Worf carried himself, down a level from if you think I'm thinking of the Trouble with Tribbles and the Klingons in that were just kind of, they called the Enterprise a garbage scowl,
Yeah, I mean, and,
To incite a fight, just for the sake of getting their hackles up.
Yeah, I mean,
Scotty ignores him until he insults the ship, which is of course the gag. He's insulting your mom, and he's insulting your lineage and your warriors, and you're so weak. And Scotty's just like, whatever, ignore him, ignore him. As soon as he called the ship a garbage scowl, he punched him. So
it's funny. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, just like you know what? Like all the naysayers be damned about this particular story. Because honestly, this is where Star Trek has wanted to go for a couple of years now. I mean, I'm gonna go ahead and bring up the worst J.J. Abrams movie, which is easily Star Trek Into Darkness, where the entire premise of that movie was: is Starfleet a diplomatic entity, or is it a military entity?
Right,
because that was one of the central conflicts of it, and they basically wanted the Enterprise to be one of the flagship, war battalion things, and then there was that big mega ultra stupid Death Star Enterprise that the other captain was doing. So it's something that has been lurking in the back of Star Trek fandom for at least a little bit of time now, and I'm honestly all for it. This is something that I believe modern culture wants. We've never seen a time where folks were more invested in stuff like first-person shooters and war games. Call of Duty has dominated console gaming for the last decade or more. The people who are watching Star Trek now are these people who are playing Call of Duty and Halo and Overwatch and all of these real-time war games. not to mention, the prominence of World of Warcraft and StarCraft and all these other real-time war games. It makes perfect sense to me why Star Trek wants to move towards, towards showing an actual war and displaying that these folks are actually soldiers in the paramilitary organization.
Yeah.
I hope they stick with it for two seasons or so, because this could be the very lifeblood that Star Trek needs in order to continue making it relevant for the current generation.
Yep, I can see that for sure. And we don't have a lot of shows that tend to be about war scenarios just in general, like anywhere.
Yeah.
Like we have war movies a lot of the time, and I'm, referencing another article that was on the Geek Embassy and how Wonder Woman got passed over for any Oscars. Dunkirk, which was a war movie about World War II.
It was probably two. I never saw it, but
it got nominated like in tons of categories, and I did see it, and I was like, I forgot that I saw that movie. Mm-hmm. It was good. It was very artsy, so I can kind of see it very artsy. But I could see kind of why it did. I was disappointed. I don't know if you were, Liam, that Blade Runner didn't get very much.
I kind of was. I get why.
Yeah.
I also don't really get why people don't like Blade Runner. I thought it was good. I think 2049 is on par with the original, and I think the original is a classic.
Yeah.
I've only seen 2049 once. It was a rare night away from a 5-year-old and a 6-month-old, but I genuinely think that 2049 was spectacular. But I also don't really care about the Oscars. It got cinematography, which was the one thing it needed to be nominated for.
Yeah.
Denis Villeneuve seems to not be liked. Actually, I don't know. I don't know if he's not liked by the Academy but he got nominated for Arrival, didn't he? I don't remember, but we hadn't seen Arrival until after we watched Blade Runner, and
Blade Runner
is better.
We watched Arrival just about a month ago, and I didn't even realize it was the same people. It was the same person.
Yeah, and I think he could have also been nominated. I don't know that
anyone
else would have been. Ryan Gosling was good, but he was so sort of deliberately flat that it's hard to nominate that performance.
Yeah, I didn't think that he should have gotten that, but I thought that it was. I liked the way the story was constructed in it.
Yeah, I just think it was a lot more thoughtful than
people
were giving it credit for, especially once just what was being said about it afterwards. Me and my wife were sitting, and we usually talk about stuff we'd seen, but neither of us could like stop thinking about it and just being like, there was so much crazy, great stuff in this, and it was great to see on a big screen. And I don't particularly care about the Oscars. As long as the cinematography got at least nominated, it should win. Again, I haven't seen, I don't think, any of the others, but it was also one of the most amazing looking movies I'd ever seen.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Sorry. Another aside.
Anyway. Yeah. This is not the Dunkirk cast.
To how awesome the fight scenes were in episode 13 of Star Trek. Oh my God.
Can I just say how happy I am that they finally finally remembered that Michelle Yeoh is a accomplished martial artist.
Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah,
I sort of figured once was it even Jason Isaacs that pulled the sword out, or did she pull the big sword out first? As soon as someone did, you knew where it was going.
Yeah, he grabbed the sword first, and then she finished him with it.
Yeah,
because
right after Burnham says she's not going to kill him because she's not what she would do, which is a very important. I had a very important thing to say about that.
Sure.
Because she spends an entire episode, the entire episode leading up to figuring out that Ash is a nightmare inside. She spends that whole episode freaking out that she's going to lose who she is in the Prime universe, like who she really is, because she's been in this universe. And it was that moment when I was like, you didn't lose who you were. And here's your proof. Of course, Giorgio.
Yeah.
is not of the Prime universe and had, you know, no compunction whatsoever to just.
Oh, no, yeah. Georgie was crying.
Driving right through the heart. God, it was so beautiful. Oh, and then the scene also, I think it was actually in episode 12 where she kills everybody in her room, in her ready room, or in her in the throne room.
Yeah, like, yeah, right after.
With the one button.
Right after Brenna reveals that that she's from Prime Universe, Giorgio, like, she executes literally everybody except for one guy, and she's basically just like, hey, do you want to be, like, a lieutenant or something? And he's like, yes. And she's like, great, your duty starts now, and he's just like, yes, and walks away.
I just thought it was so... Oh, okay, Leanne.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about, her, like, her ninja star from Wanted. That was great.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. That is. I wanted to make that reference, but I didn't think that either of you had seen that movie. I figured that I'm the only one that sees crappy comic book movies.
Oh. I was watching that ages ago, but yeah, the bending the crazy ninja star through everyone's brains was great.
Oh my
god! And the other thing we didn't mention that I at least from 12, the one of the best, my favorite scenes in Star Trek ever, maybe, was the dinner table.
Oh god.
And it's messed up and crazy, but just when I just couldn't stop grinning with that. And like, it's awful and dark and it brutal, but I was like, but this is not a thing Star Trek would ever have done before. No. And I love that it's doing it.
I mean, just the watching the train wreck, right? You cannot take your eyes off it, but it's dreadful.
Oh, yeah. And can we also nominate Sinequa Martin Green for an Emmy for outstanding role in as a lead actress?
Oh my god,
because she deserves it just for that scene alone.
Well, and what's so funny about her is you totally see how she changed with the change in the showrunners in the direction. Because we critiqued her really hard in those first couple episodes
for acting so wooden, right?
Yes, and which I think was partially story, which I defended her at that point too, with, you know, she was trying to be a Vulcan when she wasn't.
Yeah.
And she's really kind of gotten away from that now, which is good. But I think a lot of that had to do with the direction and the showrunners, and that she finally got a grasp on what she was supposed to be doing and how she was supposed to be acting it. Because my goodness, like some of the close-up moments of her face, you know, like when Giorgio was revealed, and that moment when she's like, oh, here, eat my thread ganglia. Oh, I just got a little nauseated.
You're like, I sat there and like the Stephen Colbert gif that I've sent you like 17 times over the last 2 weeks, where he's just like, ah! Just clawing at his face. Like that was pretty much me the entire time. Like, and I had to put a hand over mouth, because I honest to God thought I was gonna vomit.
Yeah, it was disgusting.
Just like, just the fact that she's looking there and she's trying her best to keep her cover, and she just can't handle it.
Together, man, I just can't imagine. Okay, we really need to get 13 wrapped up here, guys.
I'm sorry, like it's just
there's so much.
The threat ganglia was so good.
It was so good then. Well, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, 13 was it.
It's a big fight.
My big critique, like the fight was great. My big critique was that was how easily it seems that this ragtag group of fighters who have basically just been in 24-hour-a-day torture for God knows how long.
He says 219 days.
219 days. Sorry. So
I only remember that because I was watching like a collection of best moments clips.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So 219 days times 24 hours a day that they were being tortured. These people are all like remarkably sane for having endured that. And also in remarkably great shape, that they took down the entire Imperial cruiser and managed to get to Philippa Giorgio, basically in her throne room.
Well, they did have some weapon that wiped out a bunch of people.
Yeah, they breezed past that pretty quickly, but Lorca has Stamets use some whatever bioweapon he's been building and kills,
which I imagine
90% of the ship, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. Like you see a bunch of, you know, like black clouds or whatever enter
and then a lot of choking on foam and
yeah,
a bunch of extras who've collapsed to the ground. So that's That's how I see that.
Okay, so that I think that
and
was
I imagine, although they didn't explicitly say it, and Liam, you can back me up on this if you agree, but I imagine that was what was the mycelial weapon that had caused the damage, because it was some sort of, it looked spore-like. It like had the same kind of like effect that the spores have.
Yeah, and Lorca doesn't have it until he finds Mirror Stamets woken up, and then he's like, all right, give me this thing you've been building.
Yeah.
So, and obviously Lorca knows all about all the stuff that he's been doing, because when he was the Giorgio's right-hand man. I just think it all tracked. Like, I almost do think, it's weird we spent so much time on the other one, but it was a bundle of both episodes and the Mirror Universe in general. And this one, there's a lot to think about in this one. I think the thing I would most want to talk about is how, again, they've also, and I think pretty deliberately, the writers, because they were probably still working on it, on these bits, maybe not after premiered. I guess if even the timeline I'm talking about, like when I told my, hearing the people talking a restaurant story, that was early October, and the show hadn't premiered until mid-September.
Right. But
if they were dealing with some of the backlash that, it doesn't feel Star Trek-y, they just don't feel like a crew, but I just think the whole Discovery coming together and Saru's big moment, which was phenomenal.
Yes.
That I think was the standout moment. Like I really loved the whole, like, just kidding, I hate poetry line. That made me really happy.
You texted that one, or you put that in the Slack when you were watching it.
Oh God, it was great.
I hate poetry.
I hate poetry. But watching Saru become the captain that we all knew that he has been trying to be, it finally solidified his entire character arc and justified his character being on the show, because we know he's had repeated attempts and repeated failures throughout this entire series. Like, you know, most notably when he was acting captain and he was trying to use the computer to compare himself to previous captains, and
figure himself out and figure out a way to be a captain.
Yeah, to figure out a way to be a captain, like, as if that's a textbook thing to do. Right. And his speech was, like, it wasn't long, it wasn't drawn out. He chose exactly the correct words that his crew needed to hear in order to inspire confidence and loyalty and drum up morale from a bin that by all rights had no morale to scoop out of. Like, he found it, and that is, as far as I'm concerned, that is the mark of a true leader, a true captain. And Saru is, I am so proud that he has finally come into his own as a character and as a captain. It's just, it has been an absolute delight watching him move from who he was at the beginning of the show to who he is now. You know, like, Burnham has done her fair share of growing too, but Saru and Stamets, like, as far as I'm concerned, like, they are completely different people. And I am totally on board with Saru being this captain here. I mean, as far as I know, first alien captain of a star vessel. Am I correct? I know Worf had the Defiant, but that's not really an Enterprise class cruiser.
No, and this is, you know, long before that, because what, Next Generation is 100 years in the future?
Something to that effect.
I don't know if that would be entirely right, even going by the old one. It's, like, chronologically the first one we've seen, but also then there's the, what's the original series episode? Immunity Syndrome, the giant space amoeba that kills the space, which kills the ship of Vulcans.
Right.
The entire ship crewed by Vulcans.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
It was a Starfleet vessel, or was it a Vulcan vessel?
Yeah, no, it was the, let's see, I've been sitting on a review site anyway. I had the review of this episode open just so I could glance at something, but it's bugging me. It was, the Immunity Syndrome's the Intrepid.
The Intrepid, right. This is sounding familiar now.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Starship Intrepid.
Okay. All right. Well, so I will amend my statement. So it looks like he is being primed to be the first, main character who is captaining an Enterprise class vessel.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah. Yeah. That's I absolutely agree with. And it was a bit of a yes. That was a pedantic thing for me to do, but again,
okay. Tired.
And, well, you don't know if you haven't watched. That's usually me, and I'm very delighted that it's you, Liam, this time.
I'm so incredibly excited about this.
That was my like the mirror stuff was great. It was fun to do an all cartoony, but. Uh-huh. And that's actually why I would go back and disagree. I meant to before, but I didn't quite get there. I almost kind of disagree that I'd want to see them do another season of a war. Because that scene in engineering where Saru becomes the captain, like I want that crew now with Burnham. Because I also, I do love, I love Burnham. She's great.
Yeah, she has grown on me. Mm-hmm. All I need is Saru, Stamets, Tilly, and Burnham, and I got a show.
Yeah, and I also I love the way that the Saru and Burnham interplay has worked.
Because
there's been his whole when he eventually confronts her, where they confront each other, and how he resents her because she basically took everything from him a bunch of times, and you could even see it before there was that. Direct explicit confrontation when she first shows up on Discovery again, she just needles him. I don't remember the exact exchange, but I remember it being in the first non-Shenzhou episode. It was when Lorca first absconds her and she's trying to get her way, and Saru comes in and legitimately, I think, tries to push his authority as first officer of the ship. And tries to stop Burnham, but she tweaks him. She does something, I can't remember the exact line, but she deliberately needles him to do something she uses her knowledge of him.
To manipulate him.
To manipulate him to get what she wants. And I think he even calls her on it, and it's all just, it's layers of writing that just, again, I'm not going to sit here and say it's absolutely the best Star Trek of all time, because there is some great older Star Trek.
Yes.
In all of the previous series. But this is the first one that feels like A, it's hit the ground running so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And B, also has a layer of depth to the writing between the characters. Because that's the thing about Star Trek, particularly while Gene Roddenberry was alive, and then only slowly after, that you wouldn't get this sort of adversarial or confrontational even relationship between characters for more than a scene or two or a temporary character.
Yeah.
Maybe on Deep Space Nine you would, because that was the best Star Trek before now.
Which one?
Deep Space Nine. Because it just generally was the strongest and had the most. It had a bit of actual conflict and a bit of interpersonal drama.
I was going to say better character development than.
Oh yeah, you knew more about two dozen characters on Deep Space Nine than you did about Harry Kim by the end of Voyager.
Yeah, yeah, or even
or half the original series characters, but that's also because TV was much different.
Yeah, but I was going to say on Next Generation, I was going to say even those characters, although there are arcs and some development in them, they really stay kind of caricatures or, it's very, very light.
Yeah, that's true. I could practically have, instead of Harry Kim, I could have used Geordi LaForge as an example.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Almost nothing about Geordi.
Yeah, and we don't see them really grow as people until they get into the movies, and then they still only do, kind of baseline growth at that point.
Oh, LeVar Burton is great.
Yeah.
If you've ever met the man, he's possibly one of the nicest people who's ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
But Geordi LaForge isn't, and the character is pleasant.
He's
done a lot of great things, and there's a lot of great moments with him.
He's serviceable, is what he is serviceable.
Which isn't what a lot of the characters about Geordi LaForge.
Yeah, like there, and that's
stop ruining my memories of my favorite character.
I don't want to miss the veil. But it's true. Like in terms of like,
it's fine.
The depth of the stories are just not really there, and I think. And we talked about this before, that people's nostalgia really does kind of carry them into having more passionate thoughts.
Yeah. And I love Star Trek Next Generation, yeah. But I also, I think there's, out of 7 years, there's maybe 3 good ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tapestry. Or in aggregate, you add all the episodes together that are genuinely good to great.
Yeah,
You get higher peaks than you do with probably every other Star Trek.
Yeah,
with maybe overarching very small handful 7 years
worth of it. You don't. Yeah.
Yeah, but you if you try to take every individual episode and then you sort them by weight, you'll get like maybe 3 years worth out of 7.
Yeah, I tried to rewatch them not that long ago, and I just couldn't quite bring myself to do it. And I'm wondering now if that's part of what was off for me was just knowing that the. It's so much. I know people used to joke that the original series was we came, we saw, and we either fought or had sex. Like that was like
yeah,
Kirk's like approach, and Picard's was we came, we saw, and we talked about it. Yeah,
that's pretty much it.
And so I think that was part of what kind of put it off for me was. Not really wanting to get back into watching all of the talking.
Yeah. It's kind of odd to go back and rewatch Star Trek series these days. Mm-hmm. My wife and I have probably watched most of it in the last few years, probably since our first kid was born. I remember we were watching the original series right around then, rewatching it on Netflix the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's watchable. Like there are obviously some not great original series episodes.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it holds up almost best overall. Then Next Generation, yeah. it's hard to get through 7 years of it.
Yeah, that's I've thought that before too. But I think because for Roddenberry, his focus was really on morality tales and political commentary. And so I think that elevates some of the original series in a way that they were trying a little bit. There's some episodes in Next Generation that were kind of political, but not, yeah. you know,
but then quite. Also, even famously behind the scenes of Next Generation, there were writers pushing back against his ideals, but
right.
almost it was towards the end of his life. And he was at this point sort of acknowledgedly being very stubborn about what they could and couldn't do. And again, sort of inarguably about everyone who's looked at this, it was of the show because it made it less interesting.
Yep.
Conflict characters.
Yeah, I was just gonna say you have to have a conflict. Yeah, and that's what's so brilliant about Discovery is they've woven so many layers of the conflict into the story and managed to bring it all. Back together, like the reveal for Giorgio as the Emperor in the Mirror Universe, and I'm good. I guess a lot of the time, what's coming, and my husband hates it. And he hates watching things with me sometimes because I'll be like, "Oh, this is about to happen," and he's like, "Shut up!"
Yeah.
And I didn't get it, and I was like, and I went online to see, and I like checked Twitter, and I saw a couple of people who had said it before. Before the reveal came out, but for the most part, I think it caught people off guard, and I thought that was really cool.
That was the one that caught the most people, as far as I could tell. And I knew it was going to be someone. I think I had half predicted it would be Stamets.
Yeah, that's what we said.
I was almost just using economy of characters because I didn't think they would bring Michelle Yeoh back.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it would have leaked, but they did a real good job keeping that secret.
They did, yeah. Because they had her, because I had been all over the IMDb, and she had only been listed in as 3 episodes, you know, because they can blow it on things like that. We were talking about that with the whole conspiracy over Ash as well. how they managed to keep it under wraps on IMDb.
Yeah. But yeah, that and when yeah, that's but they, her reveal as the Emperor was definitely the one. It made the most sense in hindsight because, like, obviously, you're going to use the biggest reveal. Like, Stamos would have been weird and kind of boring to just use whoever was lying around because it had to be someone, or else it wouldn't have been fun.
Oh man, I thought that it was going to be Burnham. I was hoping that she was going to, like, just, you know, turn around and just be confronted with herself, and Mirror Burnham would just be like, "Oh, well, this is interesting." Cut to black, because I thought that would have been great.
Yeah, that's better.
But, you know, like Philippa Giorgio, like, said it once, I've said it a billion times, I'll follow her to the gate of hell.
Yeah.
Anyways, we have gone completely off the rails now.
A little bit, which is okay. We're still in.
I think the last thing.
Yes.
I just want to say the mirror universe, which could have been a big gimmick.
Yes.
And I think people were also worried about when it came out. I think, what is it? Jonathan Frakes leaked it at first because he directed the first one.
Oh, right.
Yes. He confirmed it. And I think, yeah, he might have leaked it, or it might have been rumbled before then. But I think the fact that this show took the mirror universe, which Deep Space Nine by the end for all that I love Deep Space Nine, it kind of ruined it by the end. It drove it into the ground. And was never more than just sort of a cartoon excuse to put Nana Visitor in a leather onesie, leather jumpsuit. But they actually, like, they tied the idea of the mirror universe into the themes of the show that they had been weaving through all the way along. And I was completely unconvinced that that could be done.
Yeah.
Okay, that was almost more than anything that the writers accomplished blew me away most. Like, the fact that they could take this goofy cartoon evil conceit that had just been used before, that everybody makes fun of, right?
Oh, you know, the evil version of him has a goatee.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
created goatee villains. I think it did. Like, the goateed Spock created the idea of ridiculous goatee villain.
Yes, absolutely.
And then Deep Space Nine again was just sort of watching Kira Nerys vamp around in her outfit and having letting the rest of the cast have a lot of fun.
Oh, I can make a Buffy reference. It's like the doppelganger episode of Buffy.
Oh, yeah. I love Doppelgang Land. It was so good.
Yeah.
But then the fact that this Star Trek could take that goony 50-year-old idea.
Right.
And yeah, it went a little cartoony, obviously, by the end. And it's not without flaws 100%, but they actually successfully tied it into the larger moral and thematic ideas behind the show and behind even Burnham's character. They never, aside from maybe the very first Mirror episode, which had a few more ideas behind it than any of the other ones they'd ever done.
Yeah. You mean the one on the original series?
Yeah. Mirror.
Yeah.
They did actually try to explore a little bit of, like, alternate personalities and
what it meant and the significance society. Of it. Yeah.
Whereas they abandoned that for cartoonishness in the later ones. A bunch of those were fun until they weren't anymore.
Right.
The fact that they could take that and fix it in this and get something that, like, could also be crazy and cartoony and have a giant sword fight at the end.
Right.
With the moon door from Game of Thrones.
I know. I thought that too.
Yeah, you could watch Burnham be concerned about holding on to who she is.
Right.
And having Saru make a big speech about conquering the evil spirit of the universe that they're stuck in, basically. It's not just about that, but they could weave all of this in and spend 4 episodes here in a row.
Yeah.
And have it not be a complete ridiculous monstrosity.
Yeah.
Like, it's,
or, yeah, jo- it's or a joke. Yeah.
That it works this well.
Yeah. Yep, I think it was. It was really, it's really cool. I'm really, I don't know. I really loved getting, being able to see Captain Killy. Like, it just.
Yeah, hurt. And it gave us Captain Killy.
It gave us Captain Killy, and I will love Star Trek Disco for the rest of my days just because it gave us Captain Killy.
Can I just say how upset I am that they built the whole thing up and then they just did nothing with it? Like, absolutely nothing with Captain Killy. I thought that was going to be a wonderful character moment where the character truly finds some confidence and she, you know, she comes.
Well, I think we still have yet to see that part pay off, because I think she's going to take the confidence that she gained acting as Captain Killy back to the Prime universe. And so I don't think we've seen the payoff for what changes have come for her.
Probably.
Yeah, I agree with that. When you first said that there wasn't the full payoff with that, and I was like, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, maybe. But then I'm also realizing that you can't think about this show the way you think about every other Star Trek, because every other Star Trek, if they're going to have learned about something, they would have done it by the end of that hour.
Right.
With
it would have been very, in the compartment.
Maybe Deep Space Nine would draw it out a little bit.
Yeah.
But Next Generation certainly wouldn't. Nope. Voyager definitely wouldn't in a million years. Enterprise wouldn't, particularly. Enterprise actually, having rewatched Enterprise recently, of all of the Star Treks, actually holds up much better than
it does.
I remembered.
Yeah. Yep.
I was the typical Star Trek snob when it was airing.
Yeah, I watched it late. I only watched it a couple of years ago, and I was like, this is really good. And they did because it is another one where it did actually have stories that arced through.
Yeah, and actually the characters would grow more. Like, T'Pol would grow.
Mm-hmm.
Most of all of them, probably just T'Pol. But like, they were actually sort of successful in that, more than I'd ever given it credit for before rewatching it again last year.
Yeah, they did. But, I like Enterprise. I know it's like... not the, like you said,
it's not great, but it also
it's
much better than people give it credit for.
It is for sure.
To go quickly back to this one point, just to say that they didn't pay off Captain Killy. I did almost agree, then I went, but then Virginia, you said, but you, it might pay off soon. I'm like, you know what, it might. I actually trust them enough, judge on what I've seen so far, that they're actually tracking this stuff.
And
whereas before, you could not count on that.
And one of the important things, too, for Tilly's arc was the science part and was healing Stamets.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it wasn't for her infusing him with the mycelial spores, he wouldn't have been able to come back, and they wouldn't have ever gotten out of there. So she still had a really... And she had to stand up against... Saru to do that, because he wanted to just leave him in the hands of the medical officers, and she had to push at him and say, you know, I'm the most qualified person to treat him here. So, and I think that that's partially confidence that she already had gained from being the cool Captain Killy wig, or at least I hope it was a wig, because I hope they didn't cut her hair like that.
They said it was
her time with Burnham, her time with Burnham.
And just on the ship in general, like, she has also grown. She started as the goofy motor mouth cadet with the sleep apnea machine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now she's, they have evolved these characters in the course of 13 episodes, and it's kind of, again, kind of bonkers considering when you look back at Star Trek's track record at developing characters.
Absolutely.
All right, really quickly, since we're run over on our time a little bit here, let's just get our predictions, what we think is going to come. I don't even think I have any at this point.
Oh, God.
Dante's thinking a war is coming.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I'm going to stick with that, is that the war's coming.
Right. And that's what season two will be about.
I do not think that the entire war story is going to be resolved in two episodes. I think it's just impossible. It's not going to happen, and they're going to end with some sort of war cliffhanger. And I'm still going to maintain my other prediction that that Burnham is going to have to watch Giorgio die again.
Right. Okay. What about you, Liam? Do you have some predictions?
I predict they do wrap up the war, but I actually agree that Giorgio is dead again.
Mm-hmm. I
don't think they can keep her alive, just story wise, and I don't think they're able to keep the door open to have Michelle Yeoh just drop in anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know that she'll be coming back another season.
I think I don't know. I don't have a ton of predictions.
Yeah.
I
don't really have a lot at this point, too.
I think Saru stays captain.
Yeah.
For the next season. I think there's Captain Saru for season two of Discovery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Burnham gets brought back into Starfleet and is the first officer, but I don't think that's a hard prediction. I think that's just where it's going to...
Yeah, that makes sense.
Just where it's going to go. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Giorgio is going to sacrifice herself for Burnham.
Yeah.
Because we have to remember that Mirror Giorgio is her mother.
Her adopted mother, yes.
Her adopted mother, but yes, her adopted mother. So the connection between them, I mean, it was always a strong connection in the Prime universe as well, but it is even more, has even greater significance in the Mirror universe. Yeah. So I think that that's, she is going to watch her die. I agree with you on Dante on that one, that Burnham has to watch, but she's also going to see her sacrifice herself so that they can get away or something. I don't know exactly what it is.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's essentially what she thought she was doing when she bought her the time so she could get off the Emperor ship in the Mirror universe. So,
oh yeah, she gonna be pissed in the next episode.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, I have no doubt about that. But I also think it's not a hard jump to make that they're gonna need her tactical understanding to get anywhere, to get some sort of advantage that she'll give them with her.
They alluded as such.
Yeah, they did.
I think also not a wild prediction or one that I even have a ton of definitive direction. I think that the Spore network gets wiped out by the end of this season.
Well,
I think
it has to. Like, it has to end. There has to be some way that they can't use it anymore, because why wouldn't they have continued to use it in the rest of the shows?
Yeah, so that's why I was like, I don't think this is a tough prediction, because they kind of have to. The entire endeavor gets sort of swept and classified.
The
one plot thread that was dangling that they did not wrap up at all was the Prime Defiant.
Right.
Supposedly was going to be this big thing, but then they just went, well, let's just blow up this glowy ball and that'll fix it.
Yeah, well,
like 2.5 episodes going for the Defiant info.
Right.
Never found it. Which I was a little bummed about, because it would have been neat to see that ship, because they were also like, producers were saying that, because again, some of the fruit hats on Reddit were saying that, well, the ship looked different in the things, and the writers just went, because it's been there for 100 years. the stands holding the warp nacelles up had a hinge in them, and some of the people freaked out.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what it looked like. That's not what the Constitution class looked like. And they're like, it's been there for 100 years, guys.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They dug into it and they did stuff to it.
Yep.
It's just, I also get mad when people get so upset about those sorts of things, and then
you should go read that.
Like, there's a very simple solution to this, you guys.
Which is get over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get over it.
It is also, it's make believe. Get over it.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it's
storytelling.
Yeah, just get over it. I mean, I challenged Evan to go ahead and write a companion piece to it. I wonder if he's going to do it.
I hope. I don't know. We'll see.
I hope he does.
We'll see. We'll see if he's got enough.
If he's got enough gusto.
Yeah, in him to respond to it. Because Dante was writing specifically about Star Wars.
So. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I TGE fans, like, I got Evan's buy-in to go ahead and do this, like, right. even though he and I are on complete opposite sides of this argument.
Yeah.
So like, we are doing this in a respectful manner, yeah. and meant to be a healthy debate among colleagues.
How we do things.
Yeah. Even though I think Evan is wrong.
Well, he thinks you're wrong too. So.
No. Yeah. Hey. So no harm, hey. No foul.
Yes. Exactly. All right. Well, thank you for watching and listening. We're always glad to have you. Are you watching Disco? What do you think? We'd love to hear your comments and your thoughts. Catch us on Twitter at The Geek Embassy or visit us at the website, thegeekembassy.com. Many thanks to Liam for joining us today. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Very exciting. Again, I was just a picture of a tie knot, but it's... It's now 12:45.
I know. It's
I did all this after two children bedtime, and it's very dark in here, and I do not look presentable for that.
I understand. I don't blame you.
And I thank you. And I do hope you join us for our last episode on the season finale, if you're willing to stay up late again for us.
Yep.
I think if you'll have me, I would like to.
I would love it. I would love it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great. So, thanks for listening, and until next time, get your disco on.
Later, folks.
Bye.